So essentially the obstacles, they're in the mind. It says the world is just more or less just a list of names. It's all what we perceive is earth, water, fire, air, and the mind, intelligence, and a few subtle things. But that's practically what we're dealing with: earth, water, fire, and air. So that's just the Krishna's energy, but then it appears in different forms. This is you know, predominantly earth. but it's made of earth, water, fire, and all the elements are in this. But predominantly it's earth like this, and the bodies are predominantly water. Although everything is there, fire of digestion is there. So everything you see is just a combination of the atoms in different formulations or different densities. So that's all it is. That's all you can see. All you can see is atoms and perceive on the gross platform. So inherently there's nothing good or bad about the material energy. The material energy is eternal. Sometimes it's manifest, sometimes it's unmanifest. So now it's manifest and we're in it. Now the problem with the first anatta is that we're not identifying ourselves with it due to the false ego. So that's the first anatta. If we can remove that, then all the others are already taken care of. But that's not so easy. That's generally the last thing that will go. The false ego is the last thing, because that's the first thing we get. The first covering of the soul is the false ego. So it's, in essence, there's no anathas. In essence, we're pure spirit soul with a loving relationship with Krishna. So this is our base. We've heard this and we have to accept on faith that this is our actual position. We do have a loving relationship with Krishna. that's only faith at the moment. But we have faith because, you know, the Acharyas are saying it, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying it, Nitya-siddha Krishna Prema, that the Krishna Prema is inherent in the soul. You're created like that. You're created, Krishna's created us, if you can. We say created, but actually you can't understand. We can't understand eternity. It's not within our conception. So therefore we say in the beginning. But there's no beginning. So for understanding, for framing things, so we can conceive it with our minds, which are limited, then we say in the beginning, God is one, and he expands into many for his pleasure. So we're one of the many. But we're the same quality as God, and for his pleasure. So that's a constitutional position, that we're the same quality of God, we're part of God, and we're meant for his pleasure. So this is the essence of what should be this should be at the back of our minds. That's what we are, and now we've forgotten. Huh? So the first thing is this ahankara, this false identity. So now we're identifying ourselves as this, first of all, the gross body, more or less. That's the biggest anatta, is this identification with the body. And then also all the another anathas we got, they're called karmas, which we've accrued through other births. So they're all anathas, because it's those things that cause us to take this body, all those desires and results of the and previous activities that we performed in previous lives. They've all accumulated in this body and this mentality that we got. They've shaped our mind and they've shaped our destiny in the form of this body. So they're all anathas. That means anyway, this is the position we found ourselves in. And now we realize, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, we have a problem on our hands. We're in a fix. We thought we was doing okay before, some of us. We thought life wasn't so bad, but now all of a sudden we realize, we're in the soup. How to get out of this thing? So you can't get out of the body. How can you get out? because you know to you have freedom to destroy the body, but it's not we know by our by hearing that that doesn't solve the problem. We just take a subtle body for a long time, and then after we've enjoyed and suffered in that body, which is more suffering actually than this body, the present situation, then we again would take another gross body. So we're in this body until it's time for us to leave, and that's in higher hands. That's part of the destiny. When your karma's finished, at that time you leave the body, because there's nothing. The body has no purpose other than that. So when we experience those karmas, so those karmas are all anarthas, more or less, because it's a desire to enjoy yourself and ourself. Now we're identifying as a body, so I want to enjoy myself, I want to enjoy the body, and the body means the senses. This is the hankara. So first, this is what we should be focusing on. That's why we've heard so nicely last few days. If you've been to some of the programs, they're only, you know, the swamis are only talking about pure unalloyed devotional service, very esoteric discussions we've been having. Pure devotional service, unmotivated devotional service. See, that actually gets at the root of the problem. So it's always a good way to preach if people are ready for it. Because then as soon as you preach on another level, then there's all kinds of questions from this way and that way and that way. But when you preach from the top, then there's, you know, everything's clear. You know, there's no question if you're a little sober and intelligent. But if you start from down here, like Varnashram or woman's rights, you know, then immediately there's, you know, social issues, then you've lifted the lid off the pot and everything comes out. So it's more interesting, more fun to speak about something like that, you know. But if you understand it from the top, from the spiritual, coming down from that, then everything will fall into place very nicely. Whereas if you go up, there's a lot of battles and arguments, and you know it's more interesting to come up. Yeah. But if you want to evoke discussion, things like that, because from the bottom, from down, then you're dealing with conditional natures, and everyone has a different conditional nature, and everyone is the center, or wants to be the center. And so what I think is actually right, what I've understood, my way is actually best. And that's my freedom to hear different opinions and accept and reject as you like. So this mind is doing that, thinking, feeling, and willing. But that sense of I know what's best for me is always there. This is the false ego. We come to display our independence. Our freedom is natural. It is natural. We want freedom, and it is a natural propensity of the soul. The soul, in essence, is free. But that freedom we're misusing. We want freedom because of the first mistake, identifying with the body. We want freedom for the senses. We don't want any restriction. But civilized life means restriction. So the more civilized life, then the more and more restrictions are there, from the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. Oh, sorry, ignorance to goodness. Or from Sudra to Brahmana, you see there's more restrictions as you go up. So civilized life means restriction. And that restriction means curtailing my freedom. I can't do what I want. I have to accept I'm accepting some superior force, some limitations. So this is good. This is civilized life. You know, I'm not able to do exactly as I want when I want. You know, which we want it. But this is what God does. He does what he wants, when he wants, how he wants. That's God's position. So that's our mentality. We've got his bhava, but we don't have his shakti. We're only tiny. But we're determined to show everyone that we are the greatest. The mind is very stubborn and backed up by the false ego. So the only this is what it amounts to, anathas, and as a result of anathas, we're just taking another body. So we should how to overcome these anathas and obstacles. So the two principles are there, that we accept what's favorable for Krishna and reject what's unfavorable. So that's the activity, that's the philosophy of our activity in a nutshell. And the mentality is always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. That's your mentality. So all the rules and regulations are condensed in those two things. So then it makes it very simple. That you just accept what's favorable for Krishna and reject what's unfavorable. The anathas are unfavorable. But you have to know what they are. You have to know what is favorable activity and what is unfavorable activity for pleasing Krishna, which is what we want to get to that position, as being again the servant of Krishna, favorably, in a favorable attitude. And we even want not only favorable, we want affectionate. That's what we want. So anything averse to that is undesirable. Pious or impious, good or bad, so materially speaking or lawfully speaking, we shouldn't consider that. But sometimes you have to. In Kali Yuga, you have to consider the law. You see. So, and also, one has to consider the your actual position. That, you know, if we just stuck on that essential principles, those essential principles of pure devotion service, it may be too elevated for us to actually live like that, because of our conditional nature is demanding attention, because we've been doing it for so many births, the mind has been taking us all around the universe for so many times, always got a better idea. And how to for some satisfaction. So, it's the same mind we had in the last life. Now the mentality has changed a little bit to suit to try to fulfill the desires, you know, or left over from before, which were unfulfilled from before. So the mind is the pivot. The mind is like the connecting thing. And it's a mind that discriminates, so it has to be trained or controlled. One who has controlled the mind, then the mind is the best friend. His mind is not controlled, is the worst enemy. That doesn't mean you make friends with the mind. It means you control the mind. When you control the mind, your mind is your friend. Don't make friends with the mind. The mind is not a Vaishna. So the mind is like water. The water always finds the lowest place. Mind is like that, not the uncontrolled mind. It always wants something different. So therefore, it's constantly looking, hovering over different subject matter, and saying I like this, I don't like that. That's his business. It's constantly contemplating these objects, this material energy in different forms, and saying this is nice, that's not nice. So millions and millions of these things are coming in every day. Literally millions and millions of these impressions, this is nice and that's not nice, are coming away. One or two or a half a dozen or maybe more. Oh, that's really nice. Let's go for it. Then intelligence comes into play and tells you how to get it or get away from it if you don't like it. So most of the information you don't use anyway, it just comes and goes. How many times in one minute? I've heard 4,000. Someone told me it was more like seven, a lot more than that. 4,000 impressions. Stimuli is coming in, according to modern science, at every minute 4,000 impressions are coming in. Right? If you're looking here, you see me, you're listening to me, but at the same time you're hearing the fan, you're feeling the fan, you're seeing the pictures, you're seeing the lights. All these things are coming in subtly, the impression is there. So right now you can see 50 things are happening at one time. So now and again something will stick out, oh that's good, you know, or that's bad. But then you go for that. There's some happiness there, some shelter there, some relief, refuge. Accepting and rejecting. That's the mind's real business. So now we have to train, we have to have information, what is acceptable and what we should reject. or what we shouldn't go for. So I said, inherently, there's nothing wrong with the material energy. It's just doing its thing. It's just the creation's going on as always, same as, you know, slight changes. You know, the climate is the seasons are not as nice in Kali Yuga as they are in Satya Yuga. You have to work harder. You know, you have to dig the ground and put the seeds and put water in. Satya Yuga, you don't have to do things like that. But otherwise, the same system is there. The food comes from the ground, and it depends on rain. Things like that. So the principles of creation are the same. They've always been going on. And basically, if people follow, like you see in Satya Yuga, everyone was Paramahansa. So then all the necessities of life are supplied. Very easy to live. It's not difficult. But in Kali Yuga, it's very difficult. So there in Satya Yuga, you could live if you still had marrow in your bones. Then the next one was air. Yeah. Next yuga, if you had air, or was it the other way around? No. When was Hiranyakashipu born? Satya, wasn't it? So he was living on the marrow because his flesh was all gone, right? The ants ate him all away. He was a skeleton. But still he was staying alive with the marrow in his bones. So in Treta, then you need I think it's air, isn't it? and in Dwarpa it's water. You have to have all those things. You have to have air, you have to have water, and you have to have, in Kali Yuga, you have to have grains, rice or grains as well. But just to get that, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy because no one's following the Dharma, samskaras, following the laws, then the Mother Earth withholds. So it's difficult to live in Kali Yuga. It's much more difficult to live. So it's more problematic. That means the conditional nature needs more attention. It's not so easy to live. So that means you've got less time on to do the real thing, for the real purpose of life. Because the conditional nature is, you have to meet these demands, and it's harder. It needs more time, more energy to do that in Kali Yuga. So, what to speak of that? Well, even they have enough grains, they have plenty of grains, they dump them in the ocean to keep the economy going in some countries. But they're not, as the modes of nature, as the people act averse and contradict the laws of nature given by the Lord, so then is Raja Tamagun become predominant. And that becomes, so when you're in the mode of ignorance, passion, then you have a different lifestyle. So then you want more things, you want more sense gratification. Okay? So everyone has become like Sudra, or even less nowadays, but that means mode of ignorance. And therefore, the life is not so pleasant, not so happy, not so peaceful. In the mode of ignorance, because the effect of the mode of ignorance is that you become more self-centered, become more selfish, more identifying with your external body and all that. Whereas in the other modes, you become more free of that. You become more broad-minded, more expansive, and you're considering, you know, other people, other community, like this humanity, and considering other people. But in Tamagun, the main thing is the main objective is yourself. It's a very selfish conception, because you don't have much. You don't really have much in the mode of goodness. You don't have that kind of problem. But in any case, Krishna says they're all conditioning. You know, you're also conditioned by the mode of goodness. So this will go on. Naturally, it's there until that first anartha is removed, until that false ego is removed. That must be there. You must be the center. To varying degrees, you're the most important person. Whether you're in the mode of ignorance, passion, or goodness, you're the most important person. The mother's love for the son, a child, is is the closest thing to spiritual. The mother will sacrifice, you know, eat for food for the child to keep the child alive, etc. So, you know, there's a few instances which are a little quite close, but essentially it's me that's the essentially the most important thing. This is natural in the conditioned state of life. Because actually we don't know who Krishna is. Krishna's the all attractive. Krishna's a reservoir of pleasure. Everything we want is emanating from Krishna, and we'll only be really satisfied when we've re-established our relationship with Krishna. That's the only thing, because that's Sanatana Dharma. Then you're naturally situated. This is natural living. Then you're a real person, as they say. And as much as you forget that fact, or don't act according to that fact, then this is as much as this means how many anathas you have and how far removed you are from the proper goal of life. So, in Sankhya, we see that, as we discussed it, they see everything as elements. They see everything as atoms in different shapes, and then you give it a name according to that shape and according to that utility. So that's all that's happening. Krishna says the bewildered soul, he thinks himself the doer of activities, where in fact everything is carried out by the three modes of nature, but the soul does nothing at all. So Krishna is saying this is a very startling fact. But that's all that's happening. The bewildered soul, he doesn't know what's happening. The mind is functioning, thinking, feeling and willing, and that is the freedom. And then that willing means endeavor. Endeavor follows when there's a will there, then there's an endeavor. But it's not your that endeavor, that ability is given, and then the material nature is presenting your karma in front, a picture of your karmas in front of you, and it's presenting the situation in front of you. And then now you're free to choose. So this is all that's going on. That's all that's going on. That's all that's happening. It's just the three modes of nature moving. The good things, bad things happening, it's just the modes of nature. This is how the Jnani sees everything. And therefore he becomes aloof from it, he becomes detached. So his knowledge brings detachment. Gyan Vairag. The result of knowledge is detachment. Because you'll see things for what it actually is. Then why you can become attached to that? Why you become emotionally involved in all these things? So it doesn't do any good, all these upheavals that you go through in your life, all these, you know, you often get, people always have problems, they come up and all problems, this, that, and that, but it's just their world they're living in. And everyone has their own particular set of problems, but it's just their view of the particular situation. That's all it is. It means a lot to them, and so it disturbs their whole life. But for someone else, it's nothing. But for them, it's everything, because their values are being interfered with. The value is not pure devotional service. The value is happiness and some shelter in the material world. So when something interferes with that, then that is a whole thing. But it's just their emotions. It's just their interaction of the senses with the sense objects that's causing that. We explained the other day, just if you've got another body, the same situation, it's completely opposite. So it's all relative in the material world. It's just relative to the particular body you got. The material, the atoms are the same. They're just changing, they're constantly changing and making different shapes. That's all that's going on here. And then they're presented before you as sight, sound, and touch, sense, or these sensations. It's just presented before you like that. And then you see the opposite. Amongst all that, the mind says, this is good. Now it's the opposite. Now it's time for some of your good karma. So is a pleasing situation come? Oh, look, let's go for that. It's a matter. So you go for it. You enjoy that. Enjoy the result of that pious activities that you've done by interacting with the senses interact, and according to your mentality you think this is nice, right? And then something bad comes, and then you say let's get out of here, but somehow or other you can't do it because you've got to experience that bad karma. So you can't avoid the trouble. So So to get rid of these anathas, see, this won't stop. That won't stop. The material energy will go on the same. It was going on before we were here, it'll go on when we left. It's been going on for billions of years. And when Mahavishnu breathes in, it all disappears. And when he breathes out, it comes out again. It works exactly the same way. Exactly the same thing is going on in different forms. So that we're not going to solve that problem. This is what it means, material world. That's why Krishna says, Abra, from top to bottom, the same thing is going on. But there it's going on in the mode of goodness, and there it's going in the mode of passion and ignorance, there it's going in the mode of ignorance. Same thing. But the mode of goodness is prominent at the top, that's all. But the same thing is going on. The same mentality is there. So it's a mentality that has to change. It's your angle of vision, your values that have to change. The material energy is not going to change. So we have to understand, now we have to learn what is right mentality, what is right activity, what is wrong mentality, what is wrong activity. That's what we have to know, that's what we have to learn. When we know that, then we have to apply it. Right? That's more difficult than understanding it, is applying it. Very difficult, as we know. Everyone knows. Pure devotional service is very rarely achieved. This is the fourth or sixth characteristic of pure devotion. It's very rarely achieved. Pure unmotivated, we're talking about unmotivated devotional service. It's very difficult to achieve because because of all these, because of these anathas, the chief anatha, because of the false ego, thinks it's so stubborn that even after you've heard, no, it's just Maya to do it, still you're going to do it. Because of your conditional nature, you think you need it. You think you need it. Now you've got to have it. It's like an addiction, material life. It's like a junkie. they get hooked on, they get addicted to drugs, and they have to have it. Because if they don't have it, they have what they call withdrawal symptoms. The body freaks out because the body's running. It is so used to this, it thinks it must have it, and it must have it. It comes dependent on that drug. So then, you know, they have these withdrawal symptoms, and they have to get some hospitalization. It takes so long, then they have to get them hooked on coffee or something like that to get them off of this, gradually off of this. They give them a lesser drug. They give them a chemical drug, which is a similar thing. Then gradually they bring them down to coffee or tea like that and try to help them out. But it's a painful process. So material, it's all the same thing. Material addiction is the same thing. You become addicted to enjoying this, addicted to identifying ourselves with the body, addicted to the idea that the suffering is some things are good and some things are bad. But it's all relative. It's all relative. It's according to your perception. Good and bad are relative according to your hot and cold, or relative according to your position. Right? I think I may have told this story last time because it was my realization. I got up, took a bath one day. It was the winter. It's freezing cold, and I didn't want to get out of the blanket. That we were sleeping in the pujari room, so it had this jolly gaffery. What do you call this lattice? These walls, so it was quite cold, the wind was blowing in, so it was I didn't want to get out of that blanket because the room was too cold, but you know, Mongol Aarti's coming, so you have to get up. Then went outside, it was even colder. Then we went under the tap, that was really cold. Then I run back in the room and I close the door. Wow, it's so nice in here. The room was nice and warm. So I wait a minute, 15 minutes ago, this room was freezing cold, I didn't want to. After taking a bath, cold bath, then I came back and the room was warm. And I was thinking, wait a minute, it was freezing 15 minutes ago. This room was freezing. Now it's warm. I'm so happy to be here. So it was only my perception that had changed. It's my condition that had changed. The temperature in the room was exactly the same as it was 15 minutes before. But one time, 15 minutes it was freezing, and the 15 minutes later it was nice and it was so pleasant. So it's relative. It's just relative to your condition. So we have to rise above this relativity. And it doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. So Krishna says you should tolerate these things. You simply have to tolerate this nature because it won't go away. You can't get rid of your body and you can't stop the nature. You're stuck. You're in a fix. Nobody asked you to come here. It was your idea to, you know. So you've just got to tolerate now. You've got to make the best use of a bad bargain. But don't become depressed, because we have a positive alternative, which the karmis don't. And their only alternative is suicide. Right? They have no alternative, practically speaking. So now we have to change our mentality, we have to change our vision, we have to change our values, how we see everything. We have a new perspective. And this perspective is 360 degrees from what we're used to. It's not an easy thing. It's not an instant. You won't do it instantly. How can you be a different person overnight? 360 degrees. You're going one way. Everything you're doing now is for yourself in the conditioned state, and now we're going to change it. Everything I do is for someone else, Krishna, Guru. You can't make that transformation overnight. It doesn't happen like that, because this conditional nature is so much demanding that we become addicted. You can't give up the addiction. You know, it takes a long process to get over the addiction, to get off that, to get off that drug. So it's the same thing. It's a gradual process. You can do it in one lifetime, but it's quick compared with karma, jnana, yoga. It's very quick, but still it's a gradual process. And you still and your nature really doesn't change very much either. You see the devotees after another 10, 15 years. Yeah, you know, the sober ones will still be sober, the funny ones will still be funny, and you know, you'll be the same personality, kind of. They won't change so much. That's my experience after 30 years. People remain the same. But they advance more. And as Maharaj was saying in the class yesterday, what's his name? Vritta Dvaja Maharaj. he said you do like Krishna, or you do, you know. He said when you go out, these things are still attracting you. These sense objects are still attracting you. They're still there, but you're not going for it. You're not making any program. You're not willing to get in contact with those objects anymore. But they're still attractive. But you know that's Maya. You're saying, the intelligence saying that's Maya, or even the mind when it's becoming trained is Maya. So you don't do it. So there's a transformation there. And so that doesn't go away. That attraction doesn't go away. Some of the attractions go away. The lesser attractions, the more gross attractions, they go away. They can go away. But the subtle attractions, or the stronger attractions, they may still be there. Because material, just like eating unofferable things, you know, you may have eaten that kind of food before, but now you're disgusted. You know, when you walk past a restaurant or something, you go like that, right? Before that was very tasty. It was desire. So there's change. Your personality hasn't changed, but your goals, values have changed. Now you don't value that smell. You don't value that food anymore. So that's great. That's a positive thing. Now you'll only take prasad. Still other things you may like. So, but we got to get completely over that attraction. But some things are natural. Some attractions are there. The man and woman, that's natural. You can't avoid that. Krishna's created like that. The other things are just due to our conditioning, what we like and what we don't like. But some things are natural attraction, just like the magnet and this thing. It's a natural force there. And if you put the pin close to the magnet, you get too close, and automatically it just becomes attracted like that. So that's why there's separation, because that magnet, that force is there, the natural attraction. And all these, there's a lot of natural attractions. So Krishna says this, the world looks nice because Krishna enters into it. He actually enters into the material energy and makes it attractive. So it's something. So sometimes it's like the created things, the things that man creates, they're just subject to your condition. You know, the fancy car and all that, and the new fashion. That's just a, that can change. They always change every 6 months or every few years. It all changes anyway. What's very desirable now in a few years, people, they don't care for it anymore. But before that, it's a big race to get it, you know, and it's a big struggle, but after a few years, nobody cares about it. So you see, the tastes have changed, fashions have changed. And more or less, the media are deciding what you should, you know, what you should wear, what you should drive. So, and you want to keep up, you want to be on top, right? This is the idea, we want to be the center. So they're saying, if you want everyone to look at you, drive this and wear this, and smoke this. So then, if you hear it so much, you start to believe it, yeah. So you get a lot of, then you do it, and then you see that everyone is looking at me. And you feel nice, you know, you're driving the BM. Because everyone's looking at you. That's what you want, that's what you come here for, to be the center. But those things, they change, but the natural ones that God made, they stay. Those attractions stay. Now they don't get any weaker. They don't lose their power the more you become Krishna conscious. You may see it like that, but actually they don't. The material energy is the same. The difference is you're getting a better taste somewhere else. You're getting the taste of Krishna consciousness. Huh? That is the result of that. Immediately you become what is it? What's the first result? Devotional service? Kleshagni. All those problems will go. Maybe it means you're going to become a little peaceful. That's the first symptom. You become peaceful and satisfied that you'll be doing the right thing, and that increases as you progress. But immediately you can experience that, you know, there's some shelter, some sanity at last. But the desires are still there. Huh? The attractions are still there. Your conditional nature is still there. You didn't change. You still like this thing, and you still like that. You still like that thing. You know, we don't all like the same things, but we still have those. The mind still goes to those things for some shelter sometimes. So that's that. The natural ones, the ones created by God, they don't stop. So so gradually as this newfound freedom from the material energy, you know, this you feel actually free, you know, and you feel better. Then you, because it means the mode of ignorance is going. This strong identification is going away. We're only talking about the soul, we're talking about the super soul, you know, spiritual activities, that's all we're doing. And we're talking about, when we speak about material energy, it's all negative. What's in the Bhagavatam is all the negative side of it, practically speaking. You know, what is the result of being attached to it, and how to become detached from it, and then how to take the same thing and use it in Krishna service, then it becomes positive. So we're hearing this is our substance, this is our foodstuff. So naturally we're becoming aloof. And we're becoming more situated in the mode of goodness. So we don't need these, you know, you don't need the fast cars and bebop music, whatever it is now. You don't need it to be happy. You know, it's lost its value. Because you've got something better. So that's the only way you can overcome, is to actually get something better. Because the material energy won't stop. The natural attraction is there. Don't think when I advance this attraction will go away, no. The attraction between man and woman is always there. That's why it's strict segregation. Even in the sages, Bhagavatam says you shouldn't sit with your mother or your daughter or sister or someone in a secluded place. And who is that? You know the story? Of the sage who said it doesn't apply to us? You know the story? Huh? Who was it? No. Was it Vasudev? Oh. No, not the Ayati. He was a sage. You know the story, then Durga comes, he sees a woman in a flash of lightning and he marries her. I can't remember. But anyway, he thought, it doesn't apply to us. This is, you know, this is unthinkable. And mother, daughter, this is not for us. And so he was proved wrong. But the sense is, the natural attraction is there. So if you come in, if you get too close, like the magnet, you know, you've only got to get too close, suddenly it's out of your control, irresistible force. So that's why segregation is there, because it's a natural attraction. It's not that it goes away as you advance. You get a higher taste, you're not interested. You're not interested in that closer. Or if you do associate closely, it's for a higher purpose. It's not for your sense gratification. We see that that is this lady is Krishna's devotee. Krishna's, why am I enjoying Krishna? I'm supposed to be serving Krishna. I want to steal his enjoyment. She's made for Krishna's pleasure. I'm thinking of enjoying. So what is that? What kind of bhakti is that? It's averse to bhakti. Averse. We want to assist Krishna in his enjoyment. Now I'm thinking I shall take Krishna's enjoyment and enjoy it myself. That's the whole reason why we've come to the material world. So the attraction is there, but then we have to see that it's just attraction. That's all it is. But then you have your rules to follow to keep you divided. Yeah. So until you have that higher taste, until you're actually getting you're relishing a taste in Krishna consciousness from your relationship with Krishna, then you're going to follow the very strictly that Vaidhi. You'll keep a very respectable distance and follow the rules and regulations. Because they're there to protect you. The rules and relations are for your protection, for your freedom from being influenced by the material energy. They're not a botheration, these rules and regulations, as you may think in the beginning. They're for your protection, because you're unprotected. The material energy is very strong, and you're surrounded. Every atom in the universe is trying to keep you away. That's the business of Durga, trying to attract your attention. either nicely or unpleasantly, either making you run away or making you run forward, one or the other. That's her business, material nature. So you're so busy running for it and running away from it that you forget. Well, you don't have time to serve Krishna. You don't have time to think about anything else. And the more in the modes, lower modes, and the more faster you're going backwards and forwards. Because so you're more in bodily consciousness, more in your I'm the doer. So the more you rise up above the modes, and the more free from you are of that conception, so then your life becomes a little peaceful and sane. but Krishna says it doesn't stop. People were also conditioned by the mode of goodness, so you should also rise above the mode of goodness. So then you get up to those platform of they're really bothering you is the natural attractions, the attractions which are made by in nature. The other ones, your fast cars and all this stuff, you're not interested in. They don't bother you anymore. That music doesn't bother you anymore. You're not attracted to that kind of stuff anymore. So these other ones, they'll always be there. That's the nature works like that. So the release from it, from the client is in the beginning it's knowledge. To understand what's going on, you can just see the Gyani sees she's just a bunch of atoms. if you're not so advanced, is this Maya? Go away. I shouldn't look. Go run the other way, because there's so much attraction. Then I gotta forcibly, turn my head and forcibly go away, because there's so much. I'm scared. So much attraction. It's so attractive that it's dangerous. I know it's wrong. And then on the final stage, when we've got a higher taste, then that taste is there. The same attraction is there, but it doesn't affect us, because we got a much better attraction, a much higher taste. So all these natural taste, which will remain the same potency, it's still there. The same potency is there, but we're not interested. Then you can overcome Maya Devi. Otherwise, you can't. You can't overcome Durga. She's the superintendent of the fortress, as we heard this morning. So the only way to really overcome is by getting a taste in Krishna consciousness, by understanding you. So these other things, the gyan, the sambandha gyan, this is help. We should know these things in the beginning, because we don't have deep affection for Krishna. That's not our sole objective. We don't have that. We still have attraction for the material energy. So then we follow these rules nicely and associate with devotees and try to understand the material energy for what it is. It's just Durga. Or you can say that, okay, I know this is just, you know, Durga's just presenting this before me just to experience some of my karma. My, you know, my good karma is an opportunity to enjoy, but I know that if I do that, I enjoy, I'm creating suffering, because I'm creating another body by that activity. So this is knowledge. Then you say, no, I'm no thanks, Durga. And then that, you don't have to, your karma's finished. Opportunity was there. Right? So that's a little difficult. That's austerity. Now you're saying no to something, you're saying no to pleasure. That's austerity. That austerity burns your karma. So you don't have to experience that karma again. So you either see it's Durga presenting this issue, or you see Krishna. Either people say it's my karma or it's just Krishna's mercy. It's only Krishna's, but I know you, Krishna, you're just testing me. I'm claiming to be a devotee of you, and you're saying, okay, what about this? And you're wah, doing anything. What about this? See what kind of devotee you are. You're, you know, exclusive devotee of me or not. So you didn't say, I know your tricks, Krishna. I'm not going to. So that's actually better, because then you're remembering Krishna at that time. Otherwise, you're remembering Durga. So it's better like that to see that it's just a test from Krishna. We claim it to be devotees. We call ourselves devotees. Now let's see what kind of. You want pure devotion? So Krishna's saying, you want pure devotion? He says, yes, I want pure devotion. So he says, what about this? What about this? Look at this. What about this? So these are the tests. That's what's actually happening. She's working under Krishna's instruction, right? Krishna says, bewilder them. See if you can keep them in the material. Your business is to keep them here. My business is to get them out. Your business is to keep them here, okay? This is your service. So that's what's going on. So either one, you know, if you understand that Durga's working under Krishna's order, or you see Krishna's hand directly there, it's the same thing, as long as you connect it with Krishna somehow or other. So everything you have to connect back to the spiritual. Then if you see from that perspective, then you're safe. You have the knowledge, you have the right perspective, but you still have your freedom. You can still say, you can still take it, you can still go for it. That's your independence. Krishna's not going to interfere with that. But we should know. At least we should know what's going on. Now deliberate. Krishna says, I have told you the most confidential thing, right? He said, now deliberate on this and act. Do what you want. He doesn't force. He's not forcing. So that is our position. We're learning these things so that we can come at this. But we got to see everything in relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, the jnanis do the same thing. But they see everything in relation with mukti, impersonal, or the pious people. They see the same things, but in relation with being on a very high society and very cultured. They think that they won't do it because of the infamy that they'll get in their culture. They want to be very refined society. So that's their goal, and that's their fear. That's what's keeping them there. They won't be respected. Our fear is the jnani's fear is that he won't get mukti, and our fear is that we won't get Krishna. So we see it like that. So we understand what's going on. It's Krishna's energy. It's Krishna's arrangement. It's Krishna's program. Somehow or other, we see Krishna in everything. This way, we can be Krishna conscious. Always. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Will there be any comments or questions? Or is it already 12?
You told about certain things that will never go away, that is the natural attractions. I was thinking, does it mean that this biological instinct of eating, sleeping, mating and defending, are these the natural attractions?
Yeah.
They can be.
Yeah, then it's natural. Why is everyone doing it? Every living entity, every moving entity is eating. Every moving entity sleeps. To some degree, even the cows, they sleep. Even the minute they close their eyes, at least, they lay down. They're in the mode of goodness, they hardly sleep, cows, but they'll close their eyes. If you go up, they'll open. Defending, everyone's defending. When it gets cold, they move away, you know, you put your sweater on. Mating is there, you see, the procreation is there. Must be, otherwise there's no, if there was no mating, there'll be no continuation. And the Lord's program is continuation. So therefore he puts a pleasure coating around on the genital area. And it's pleasure what we want. And you're not getting it from the spiritual platform, because we've forgotten Krishna. So there's instant pleasure. So it's natural for all the conditioned souls. Pleasure's there. That's like the top. Sex pleasure is the top. It's second, actually. But just, if you can be worshipped, that's better. You can give up, you know, you can sacrifice it to be worshipped, because that's what actually came here for, to be God, and God is worshipped. So if you're the center, but not many people can do that, be God. But sex is easily available. Sex pleasure is easily available. There's a pleasure code in there. Otherwise, it's a horrible thing. The whole act is horrible. And medically, this is all the bacteria. Most of the bacteria on the body is in this area. This is when the body is described in the chapter of Paranjan, the city of nine gates. So the body is like a city with nine gates. So this genital area, this is the drains. All the refuge comes out of this area, right? So these are the areas that you're concentrating on, and you know, for your pleasure. That's where you get your pleasure. In other words, you're going diving in the drains, you know, to get your pleasure. That's what's happening. If you see it like that, that's how the Bhagavatam described it. But that's where you're taking your pleasure, in the most horrible part of the body, where all the refuse comes out. That's where you take your pleasure. That's your value. But if pleasure's there, undoubtedly the pleasure is there. So that's, and you've got to have pleasure. You must get pleasure. Unless you're strange, unless there's something wrong. It's pleasure, that's a driving force. What's everyone doing? Why is everyone working? as soon as the pain stops, then you want pleasure. Everyone's working to get some shelter, to get some food and some house. As soon as you got that, then let's go and enjoy, if you've got time. So that's the idea. As soon as the suffering is stopped, for temporarily, because it doesn't. Krishna says it's all suffering. Constantly, every 6 hours you've got to eat, you see? It's constantly suffering. If you don't eat after 6 hours, suffering. If you don't sleep after 12, suffering. So you're forced, but it's conditional nature, it's forcing you, it's suffering. But as soon as you get a little comfortable and that's it, and you've warded those off to some degree, you may not have an air conditioner, but at least you've got a tarpaulin over your head, you know, keep the rain and the sun off. As soon as you've got that and something in your belly, then you want pleasure. There it is. There's sex. Easily available. It's natural, because we're pleasure, that's our nature to seek pleasure. But the real thing, we're seeking pleasure for Krishna. But now that desire is focused on ourselves. We want pleasure for ourselves, because we want to be the center. But in the spiritual world, it's the other way around. But Krishna's pleasure is their pleasure. In fact, they get more pleasure than Krishna. They experience more pleasure than Krishna. But this is inconceivable. To be a servant is more pleasurable than being a master. It's inconceivable for us. It's complete other way around. We're conditioned like this for our pleasure. So you've got to accept these things on faith, because we don't have any experience of these things. And that's tapasya. It's faith is what's keeping you going through the anatha nivritti period. This is a tapasya. After anatha vritti, it's all downhill. Because there's te, you're steady, there's te, ruchi's there, you're enjoying it. to get over this anatha nivritti, to overcome these obstacles, that's difficult. It's tapasya. It's not tapasya, actually. When you're there, you can see it's a joke, you know. Well, you're struggling so hard to get this stuff which is giving you another body which is full of stolen urine. and blood and bones. You work so hard to get another one of those bags, packets. And as soon as the skin gets loose, nobody's interested anymore. But still, you don't give up that vain desire to get to have, and because you can't get it, then you have to take another packet to try to fulfill that desire. But it's the same thing. Inside the packet, there's still hairs, nails, blood, urine, fat. Huh? As soon as you take the packet, as soon as you open the packet, right, and everyone runs away, you have to call a bungee to, right? When you see something like that, any of those things, you see hair, flesh, blood, stool, urine, bones, marrow, you avoid that. You have to take a bath. If you touch that, you have to take a bath, right? Especially the pujari. You won't go near that stuff. When it's a little bit of skin on it, you run for it. Right? When it's packed up nicely in the skin, then you want to, right? But that's all it is. So they say beauty is only skin deep. Same thing. What are you chasing after? But because the soul is there, it becomes attractive. Because the soul is a part of Krishna, he's all attractive. So this is Maya. Even you know these things, you're still attracted. You're still going to do it. Nothing. Prabhupada said, I think I may have told that story. Sannyasi wanted to get married. So the devotees were trying to convince him, and he made up his mind. So they said, Srila Prabhupada, we're going to tell Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada, this Sannyasi wants to get married. We can't convince him out of it. He's determined to go ahead. He said, even though she's older than him, she's ugly, she's got a couple of kids. And he said, why is he doing it? Prabhupada said, very, very easy. Three words. I like it. I like it. He said, if you say I like it, he said, nothing you can do about it. So that's your freedom. That's your independence. I like it. The intelligence is telling you all these things, so I like it. That is your choice. So that's your only freedom. You've got freedom of choice. So if you know what to choose, that's the first step. You've got to know what to choose and what to reject. Accept what's favorable, reject what's unfavorable. We have to know these things. And then the choice is, then how you do it, that's how much you're going to advance. How much spiritually you advance is how much you put down that desire to enjoy yourself. That's your spiritual advancement. Until you're in a position when you're free from those things, and then you're actually relishing Krishna consciousness. You're actually relishing hearing Krishna, hearing the philosophy, hearing Krishna's pastimes in association with devotees. You know, you're relishing. That's as far as you can go. You've done that. Then you're really you're really disinterested. You've got something better. You're relishing that. You're not interested now in those other things. Now you simply have to wait for the mercy. From that point, you simply have to wait and see what happens when you leave your body. Nothing you can do about it. From that point, as long as you've got attraction for Krishna, that's, you know, you've got something better than what's available in all the material worlds. So you're satisfied in that position in Krishna consciousness. But whether you go back to Goloka, whether Krishna reveals himself, that's up to him. He also has his freedom like we have. So you may qualify yourself, but still Krishna is Krishna's, what's the word? Huh? Krishna's prerogative. Prerogative. It is prerogative to show you. When he wants to show himself, he'll show. When Bhakti wants to show herself, she'll show. She's completely free. Like we have freedom of choice, they also have freedom of choice. And nothing you can do to get it. You can try. You can please the pure devotees. But still she has her prerogative. You may be qualified as a first, but still she has her prerogative to descend on you. And then still Krishna has his prerogative to take you into his pastime. Still. But he will. He says he will. We have faith he will. But that freedom is there. He has that freedom. Bhakti has that freedom, and we have that freedom also. But we can't go. We can't transcend on their freedom because they're a different category. But we can transcend the lower category. We can transcend Durga. Although she's Jiva, she's an equal category. We can transcend that. That's our freedom. above that we can't transcend, we can't enter into someone has to open the door, right? You can knock on the door, you can go there, knock on the door, but someone has to open it before you go in. So we're dependent on that. That's mercy. But you qualify yourself to get to knock at the door. That's as much as we can do on your own, with the help of course, with the help of the devotees. Did you answer the question?
Like, many times we have heard that there is no impediment, material impediment for devotional service. But at the same time, the material conditionings are very much to do with devotional service. Is it that understanding is for Raganuga level, that it's not impediment? Bhakti can be done in any condition of life. There is no material impediment for devotional service. Like we are discussing now, the conditioning, we have to say no.
Yeah. Yes, it doesn't, that depends on, there's no material, it doesn't depend on material circumstance or geographical location. Better, some places are better than others. It's better in the dham if you want to perform devotional service. It's better. But it doesn't mean to say you can't do it downtown Bombay. Come by. If you're willing to do it and you know what to do, you can do it. There's nothing stopping you except your own stubbornness, the mind's own stubbornness. It's because you don't. You're making the choice to do it or not to do it. But if you know what to do, the opportunity is there at any moment. There's no material impediment. Look at the devotees in Russia. The whole government was against them. They were persecuted, put in jail, tortured. There was a lot against you there, a lot of impediments. Still, they didn't give it up. They practiced, some of them. Others, some made a choice to practice, some died. Some made a choice to say, oh, I won't do it and be free. they made different choices. But you see that you won't get much worse than that. To be put in Siberia, you don't get much worse than that. Conditions are not much worse, and you only get potatoes to eat, bread and potatoes. And it's sub-degree outside. And you have to go outside and work. You don't get much worse, and then they take away your Kunti Mala, they take away your Japa Mala, they tear up pictures of your Guru and Krishna in front of you, they blaspheme, everyone tell you mad, they give you drugs that you can't stand up and you can't sit down. All these things. You don't get any worse than that. Still, they made the choice, no, I'm surrendering to Krishna. So the examples are there. I mean, these are real life examples in our times, that we, apart from the acharyas. And, Krishna always puts his devotees in distress because they're the ones, only ones that can overcome it. Arjuna, the Pandavas, were the only ones. The gopis were the only ones that were able to overcome what they had to overcome, giving up their social life, running away from their parents and their husbands, and leaving their husbands, parents and children. For a young girl, it's a very serious thing. Abandon everything, all social conventions for Krishna's sake. Only they could do it. So Krishna did it with those. To glorify the devotee, see? This is how much my devotee is. So the examples are there, but even modern day examples are there. So there's no material impediment. Children, husband, wife, parents. Gopis left that. Of course, we may not come to that standard, obviously. We may not come to the standard, but Krishna is putting his devotees in that standard. Goswamis, they were prime ministers. They left. Took one cloth. Fame, name, fame, wealth, power. They gave it all up. They made it in the material world. They gave it all up. They made the choice. It was too difficult to do both at once. Otherwise, if it's okay, then we don't reject anything. If it's okay. if we have a lot of opulence, that's Krishna's mercy or our karma, use it in His service. Anything can be used in the service of Krishna, more or less anything. So it's not that we're going to reject things. It's just that we got to know how to use it, how to engage it.
One person, a devotee, was asking,
if a person is mentally retarded, completely, quite a severe amount of retardation, so then how can he know about Krishna? How can he?
He can't. You can give them prasad, charanamrita, and bus. Prabhupada wasn't much interested like that. I think they mentioned it. I'm not sure. I haven't read it, but I just heard some. They do programs in mentalist institute and Prabhupada. Don't bother with those. There's too many people out there. Why bother with these people? They don't usually change if they're too far gone.
No, then how can we say that apratihata? That means some impediment is there in rendering service.
Yeah, well, that's their karma. I mean, they could have got an animal body and been in the same position, but they got a human body, but they didn't get any advantage of the human body. That's their karma, was to suffer like that. The only good thing about it was they got a human body. What's the use of it? What is the use of it if you're born a vegetable? If you can't understand Krishna consciousness, if you can't understand, then you don't have that, intelligence is not functioning like that, then it's no better than an animal body. Because that's what human form is, the speciality of human form is that you can understand these things. If you're in such a position where you can't understand, then there's no hope. You give them prasad and try to meet it. They'll get love of God in some lifetime. If they don't get it in this lifetime. They may be born in a family devoted, or they may, if you can engage them in service, but it's a big endeavor. If you want to engage them and to do some service, they can, you know, maybe make some handicraft or do some service if they're not too far gone. That's their benefit. But there's so many normal people out there which would, you know, why would put so much energy into trying to, you know, save some people like that? It's just too hard. What, we're not equipped for that kind of thing. We're like a mission. So that's their karma. Nothing you can do about it.
So it's only physically they have received a body.
Huh?
Physically they have received a human body.
Yeah.
But practically it's...
Yeah, I know. Just like the savages, Prabhupada said, those pygmies. He said they're just a little bit above animals, that's all. They recognize God in nature, he says, the aborigines. They worship the sun, or they worship the mountain. They recognize, the animals don't even do that. So they're just a little bit above the animals. Well, they eat whatever moves, you know. They're savage. They're really in the mode of ignorance. Right? You see how they live. They eat raw, live insects and whatever they can get there. It's just above animals, uncivilized people. We can engage the animals also, you know. Mahaprabhu did. But you can feed the animals prasad, you know. They get love of Godhead in some lifetime. Give them charanamrita. That's you just see that as their karma. Somehow or other they got a human birth, but it was to no avail to have a human body. Better they didn't get that. But anyway, they got to live out this karma. They're not meant to know. They're so sinful. Or they made such an apparat that in this life, even though they got a human body, they have no chance of understanding Krishna. I mean, severe cases. So that means they're probably apparatus. Probably. That's my own speculation, of course. Otherwise, why do you get a human body? If they can't function like a human being, you got the human body without the intelligence. It could have been anybody. And then at least you could have functioned properly. You could have been happier as an animal. So it's severe karma they got. They've got to live that out. And then the parent, and then your karma, it's your child, you know. You've got to get everything for that person, you can't do anything. What a burden in your life. You know, 24 hours you've got to be with them. It's your karma, you've got to suffer like that. What did you do to someone in your last life?
And you're saying that, you've heard that regarding that there's no obstacle. People are tested sometimes, put in prison house and beaten up. And one devotee from Russia, he was telling that they were injecting some drugs which would alter their consciousness, and ultimately they could become completely. So then we understand that it is their past karma, or that their because we know that Krishna never tests beyond our limits, but they just fall off just because they just can't constant this injection of drugs. Makes them completely, and I can't even chant. Is that their desire was not strong enough, or?
No. No. Krishna doesn't guarantee to save the body. I mean, so many devotees got killed also, just for being devotees. But that doesn't stop the progress of their devotional service. They'll continue where they left off. And then they get a new body and start off again. So that person will suffer. He's interfering with the nature. He's that person who's killing a devotee or infecting them like that. That they'll suffer heavy karma. That's unnatural. They're going against the laws of thing. That's their freedom. They can you're free to go and kill someone if you want. So you can't say that actually it was that person's karma to die right at that moment. So then you'll be excused, right? If it was his karma to die, what's your fault? So you can go and shoot everyone and then say, see. So that's not the philosophy. No, you misuse your independence. You misuse your independence. But that won't affect their devotional service. And it doesn't affect karma. You know, they can adjust a few years on the next life or a few years less on the next life, a few years more on the next life. It's like you say, when is an aeroplane crash, there's 500 people, they all die. It may not be the 500 people that have to die exactly that second. They can be adjusted. Some meant to die before, some meant to die afterwards, around that time. So a few years this way or that way, it's no difference. They adjust it in the next life, you get a few years longer, a few years shorter, or whatever. But the soul, the person, that devotional credit is there. There's nothing lost is there. And that they'll just pick up in the next life. So Krishna is looking after. He's not looking after. He doesn't say the body. He doesn't say I'll protect the body. He doesn't say that. Body's padam padam yadvidas, like the jalama kalama. It's just like a water on a lotus leaf. It's very fragile, this life. So Krishna's body, he said, it's going to get, today or tomorrow it's going to die anyway. So Krishna's not so much concerned with that. When he says, I protect my devotees, that's the devotee, isn't the body's not the devotee. Sometimes he says like that. Sometimes he says like that, I'll take care of their arrangements, you know, their families, so they won't bother them, things like that. But generally it means your devotional life is spiritual. So it's got nothing to do with this body. In your last devotional life, you didn't have this body. And before that, you didn't have that body. So that's relative. What kind of body you're in? It depends on your consciousness. Of course, as long as you're a human body, that is, you just continue. If you've got the opportunity in the next lifetime, Krishna will arrange it that you'll come into contact with devotees and continue from where you left off. So that is continuous. His devotional service is continuous. The bodies are going to come and go. You're going to get so many different types of bodies on the way before you reach Krishna. Oh, you've had so many types of bodies on the way before you reach this point. And you've picked up where you left off on everything. So your devotion is not interfered with. There was no material obstacle. Death is not an obstacle in devotional service. But because we're very concerned with the body, because it's our strongest identification, then we start to identify everything means the body. But it's very precious to us. The body is very precious and very dear to us. You know, it's the most dear thing to us. It's the most dear thing, because the soul is most dear. So when you become self-realized, then the soul is most dear. The body doesn't come; it loses its importance. It loses its value. The soul gets the value. And when you become Krishna conscious, the soul loses its value. Krishna gets the value. So that's why you've got kami. You're just enjoying your senses. Then you get the jnani, the mukti, and that's your most important thing. Then you get the bhakti, and Krishna's the most important thing. So you transcend. You transcend these things. The karma is selfishness, is their sense gratification. The gan is selfishness, is their freedom, complete freedom, liberation. But it's still self-centered. It's me. It's, the object is me, my satisfaction. So that my satisfaction is most important. But whereas a bhakta, Krishna's satisfaction is most important. And whatever else happens is secondary. It just happens, and we accept what happens, good and bad. We accept it as what's due to me. That's the devotee mentality. So then he's happy. That's why it says that only the devotee is happy, because in distress and happiness he's not concerned. He's not working for his happiness, and he's not working to relieve the distress. He's working for Krishna's pleasure. Therefore he's happy, he's satisfied. When the consciousness is right. When he's really doing it for Krishna's pleasure, then the consciousness is right. So only the devotee is actually satisfied, because he's not disturbed in happiness, and he's not disturbed in pain or obstacles. They don't disturb his devotional service. Look at Prahlad. Didn't waver him. Half an hour late.
You may not be feeling, but just for others' sake, in front they are doing, but then at the back you are back to square one. So isn't it like you feel very hypocritical?
No, the madhyam or bhav, he's acting, he's thinking, what will the kanista think if they see me doing this? What will there be in their impression? So then he'll act according to them. That means he'll follow the rules and regulations carefully, although he doesn't have to. Because if people say, well, he does that, you know, he wears ankle bells when he's offering aarti and ching ching. So we should do it. He's very advanced devotee, he's doing that, so we should do it. So the tendency is to imitate. This is an advanced devotee and this is how he acts, we should do the same. But that's external. But for that advanced devotee, it's not external. That's actually his bhava. So for the Uttam, then he'll do that. He'll act in it. The Jains, they follow Rishabdev. No one's on his platform. They pull out their hair and don't wear any clothes, but no, who's on his platform? It's not a sadhana to be like that. It's actual self-realization. He doesn't know whether he's dressed or not. It's not a sadhana to imitate like that. It may it's okay. It may help for something, but he wasn't recommending that path. That's how he behaved. He didn't teach that to his sons. Walk around naked and don't care about anything. He didn't say that. But that's been interpreted as a Jain religion now, and their priests say do that. So that's imitation. It may be all right. It's a way. It's a lifestyle, but. It's not a sadhana. So a madhyam platform is not a. It's not that you're very expert in acting and doing these things, that you've learned what to do and you do. It's a consciousness. Medium is a consciousness. It's not that you've just learned everything very expertly and they say, oh look, he's such a nice devotee, see how eloquently he speaks, see how eloquently he dances, see how eloquently he sings and plays, musician. See how eloquently he deals with that. That's not the standard. That's a behavior, but what is a consciousness? If his consciousness is madhyam, then he's madhyam. If his consciousness is not madhyam, no matter how expert he behaves, he's kanishta. So it's a consciousness that we want. if that's your consciousness, if you behave anyway, it doesn't affect that. So he can behave as a kanishta, but he's not hypocritical, because his consciousness is still right. As Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that a self-realized soul, he has no duty to perform, but still he performs duty so that common people will follow. And so in the purport there, Prabhupada says, so a self-realized person, he has no reason to follow these rules and regulations, and he has no reason not to follow the rules and regulations. Whether he follows them or doesn't follow them, isn't it? But to set an example, then he'll follow the rules and regulations. Because that's how you come up. You have to come up through the stage, you have to follow, accept some rules and regulations. So he's not obliged to do it, but he does it. He's got to do something, right? So he's not obliged to do that. So in public he'll do that. Therefore it says that what a great person, that you shouldn't imitate great persons. It's often mentioned throughout the scriptures. You don't, because those great persons, they may act in a way that is contradictory or according to social or moral principles. But this is those persons, you can't judge those persons because they're so powerful that even if it's sinful socially or morally, that doesn't affect them. They're so powerful that reaction doesn't affect them. Otherwise, our head of our sampradaya, Lord Brahma, he chased after his daughter. What kind of sampradaya are you coming from? But you can't blame, you can't say, look, if Brahma did that, then what was the hope, or, you know. But if they're doing it, maybe for an example, it's some leela, that even this position, you can be affected. Or whether he was affected by the mode of passion and did chase after his daughter in passion, still is not to be criticized. Because he won't get a reaction like we'll get, if we do it, we'll get a much different reaction than what Lord Brahma gets. We'll go to hell and it won't affect him because of his powerful position. So we don't judge great personalities. When there's a difference between, when there's an argument or a difference of opinion between your guru and his godbrother, you don't take sides in the argument. You follow what your guru says. But it doesn't mean to say if he says something different then he's wrong. Because I accept what my guru said, it must be right. No, you must accept what your guru says and follow that. But it doesn't mean to say the other one is wrong. It's a different level up there. So you can't judge from there. There's an aparad, it's guru aparad. Because his godbrother is your guru Varga. His guru Varga is, you know, he's on the same level. You should treat him like your guru. You follow your guru's instruction. He's your personal guru. But he may have a different bhava. There may be a difference there, and his disciples will follow them. Then you're going to have a fight, right? You're going to have a disciple war going on. My guru is right, now my guru is right. And if my guru is right, your guru must be wrong because he's saying something different. You don't discuss on that level. That is on that level. That is between them. This is another different level, different generation. That's how they're behaving. I can't understand. Anyway, I know what my guru says, I'll follow that. And this is what your guru said, why aren't you doing this? My guru said you should do that, why aren't you doing it? No, my guru told me that, it's fine, I'm doing it. What can I say? Your guru told you to do it there? I can go to my guru and say his guru said do this, and then they explain to us the difference. Why? They can explain to us if we're confused. I mean, not major difference, I mean, they're all following the... In ISKCON, we all follow Prabhupada's teachings. They can't be different from Prabhupada's teachings. But then there are, you know, like people have different views on things and different approaches to things. But in the spiritual world, these contradictions can be compatible. But here, there's, you know, because we're in this three-dimensional world, then they're not compatible. But in the spiritual world, the opposites can be compatible. Although there's no rasa bas, it's a different world. So there also is a different platform. So for the higher people, it's like Prabhupada, if we say he's a great Paramahansa. But he's coming down to the Madhyam platform to preach. But it doesn't mean to say, you know, any time he can be right back in his eternal position with Krishna at any moment. But he's coming down, he's got to be on the Madhyam platform to preach, to relate to this material world. But at any moment, it doesn't mean that any moment he can't just be back right in Vrindavan, his consciousness. So you can't judge. Now we say Prabhupada's Madhyam. Right? By activity, by his preach, Prabhupada's a Madhyam Adhikari. But we understand that he's much more than that. But he was acting as a Madhyam. He was, factually, that's what we saw. He was dealing with pound shinners and pence and performing marriages. And so it's a question of consciousness, not behavior. It's nothing to do with it. It's a consciousness, and you won't see the consciousness. We judge by the activity and what people say and what they do. That's how we judge. It's the only way we can judge because we can't see the heart. But you must be careful that, you know, when you're dealing with Vaishnavas, because you can't see their heart. You don't know who's more advanced than another, because people have different characteristics. Because someone's very low key and, you know, doesn't come forward, and you know, you may think they're not very significant, but if you see the devotion they have for Krishna in their heart, they may not express it so overtly, but we can't judge that. So therefore, we call everyone Prabhu. Otherwise, you may make an offense. And we've considered ourselves Das, Das, and Das. This is safe. Then you're safe. Only for this reason. Well, the reason is, anyway, we are insignificant. We should feel ourselves insignificant. But for that reason also, that we're respectful, because you may make a big blunder, and it's the worst thing. You know, it's worse than anything to offend a devotee. So this is safe. So we don't judge. Or you can say the guru, he's only got one arm. Then that means in his last life he was sinful. He performed some sinful activities. Like the smartas, in the smarta, then you can't, or in the Vedas, you can't do pujas, you can't do you can't sit in on any body, any management body, or government body, if you have some deformity. If your skin is too dark, if you have white leprosy, if you have some deformity, then you can't sit on that body. If it means in your previous birth you had some sinful activities, and that's visible now. So according to that, then you can't even sit on a governing body. So that's how strict that is. But with Vaishnavas, we don't consider those things. A person's trying to surrender to Krishna, then we don't see those things. That's enough apparat to see things like that. Vaishnavas, you have to be scared. It's a different category altogether. they're above all the other humans and beings. Anyone who's sincerely trying to serve Krishna, they're not ordinary human beings anymore. All the others are coming up to that platform. The topmost human beings, most cultured human beings in the world, are coming up to this platform of being sadhana bhaktis, sadhana bhaktis. Because as a result, we've done all that before. You've done all that stuff. You've been a cultured gentleman before in your previous, and situated in the mode of goodness. You've been a brahmana and done all that. Otherwise, how can you take the devotional service like this? Unless it's mercy. So you've got two things there. But in any case, any way you accept it, that this position is better than any other position in the material world. It's better than the position of Lord Brahma. That's what they say. If you're a Vaishnava, if you're sincerely trying to say Krishna without any other motivation, well, which is supposed to be our goal. You don't care, you sit here, there's so much sense gratification being wasted. We should be out swimming now in the pond. You're just sitting here talking philosophy and Krishna Katha. We could be enjoying splashing in the pond. Vaishnava sports, water sports and wrestling. Huh? I think you must be more advanced than me. There's another program at 6 o'clock, no? So you go to the pond at 4 o'clock?
Huh?
No, I'm asking. I'm not saying.
Nowadays devotees are not being going, since they have not been working for also.
Why can't you go now? At all?
Now it's time for lunch.
That's the moment. You miss your lunch. Well, I thought you was unmotivated, but now I see. You're going to miss your lunch. You miss the boga, prasadam. Krishna's prasad. All bogus. I thought, I just want to sit in here, just like the sages at Namasanya, you know, just sitting there without eating and sleeping for 7 days. We could be out there enjoying, swimming and playing around and let's go. No, we've got to take lunch. That's the motivation. Yeah. You're going to miss this is more important than the playing. The pain in the belly, that comes first. You got to resolve that pain before you can enjoy. How can you enjoy if you're hungry? They're intelligent. They're self-realized in the material world. As far as sense gratification is concerned, they're self-realized. No, we are self-realized as far as sense gratification is concerned. That's why it's hard to give it up on faith. You know, we have tangible realization of sense gratification. this taste is only faith. We haven't got it. Right? But this taste is actually tangible. We've realized it. And we know the process to get it. It's scientific. It's very easy. And it works every time, more or less. More or less. You know the system, right? It's easy to enjoy. You've done it so many times and we're fully convinced. We have realization. And now we're giving it up on faith. This is the passion. On faith that we get something better. It's only faith. You want to close, or you're just going? This is your swimming time. You sacrifice your swimming time.
All here are self-realized. So the priority is
safe. They're not renouncing it. They're just putting it back a little bit. They put it to 4 o'clock instead. They put in their boga till 4 o'clock instead of 12 o'clock. They're not giving it up. Intelligent. Okay? We should close or not?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Srivabhada ki jay. Krishna consciousness ki jay. have a shot. I got the real enjoyment.
Come the other way.
Thank you.